Welcome back to Backbone Radio. Your host, Ross Kaminsky. Joined on the line by Jude Sandoval, my friend and fellow graduate of the leadership program of the Rockies. Jude is running for the office of mayor of Aurora. I think we've lost Randall O'Toole, but we're trying to get him back, so I'll just chat with Jude for a couple of minutes here. So, Jude, how did you find out about this Gaylord Entertainment proposal? Did it just come out in the news after the vote and you just found out about it like everyone else, or what's the story?
I had the opportunity of finding out from one of the existing city council members that gave me a heads up that it was put on the council's agenda on that Friday before their council meeting on a Monday, but was not able to garner any information about it, any details, the 126-page agreements between the city and Gaylord. And really nobody in the public knew anything about this until their presentation at city council on that following Monday. At that meeting, city council voted on it. So there's been there was zero input from anybody on this. And I got to tell you, you know, we've been going door to door now for a while here on the campaign. And the day after this was approved by city council, typically I can walk 25 homes in about an hour. I only got through 30 homes in 3 hours, and the topic at every home was this project, and it was not very popular.
And Randall, do we have you back on the line?
Sure.
Hey, great. Glad we got you back here. Tell us a little, Randall, in a more general basis about how these large TIF projects tend to work out versus the expectations and what the public is told will be the benefits in terms of, you know, like you talk about TIF by the numbers.
Well, it all depends on what kind of project it is, but this project is for a conference center, and nationwide we have a glut of conference and convention centers because cities all over the country are using TIF to build giant convention centers, often connected with hotels that are also subsidized by TIF. Sometimes the cities actually own the hotels as well as the convention centers, competing with private hotels in the same city. And they build them, and then because there are so many nationwide, they have very high vacancy rates. The city of Portland, for example, had a convention center that was getting enough business to be about 75% occupied. They actually asked voters if they wanted to raise their taxes to double the size of the convention center. Voters said no, so they did it anyway using TIF. Now it's about 45% occupied. So now they want to build a hotel to support it, and the experience has been in cities that have built hotels next to convention centers is that they have low occupancy rates as well. Plus, they're competing against other private hotels. So that's probably what's going to happen here is Denver has a convention center. Aurora's convention center is basically going to steal business away from Denver, and yet because Denver's convention center is more closer to the center of attractions in the Denver metro area, the Aurora convention center probably isn't going to get that much business either.
You know, what's interesting is Gaylord Entertainment has a reputation, and I'm not using that word as a negative. Their business model is they try to build this sort of all under one roof model, you know, hotel, restaurants, convention center, shopping, everything, so that people who are there for the convention don't have to leave the property. So then the arguments for any kind of economic development other than just the whatever the tax base is on that footprint of land is erased, even if someone wanted to believe that.
Yes, and there are all kinds of companies all over the country that have become specialists in benefiting from tax increment financing. For example, Cabela's, the nation's number one sporting goods chain, uses tax increment financing to build its developments, and it will go to a community and say, look, we want to build in your community if you give us $30 million in TIF money. If you don't, we'll go to some other community that will.
You know, it's funny that you mention that because to get to my radio show, I drive past a Bass and a Gander Mountain. So why don't you tell us about those two?
Well, Bass, which is the nation's second largest sporting goods retail chain, has gained more than $500 million in tax increments finance subsidies for its stores all across the country. That's more than $500 million in subsidies. Gander Mountain is the nation's third largest sporting goods chain, and its CEO is a free market advocate who doesn't believe in subsidies. He's lobbied against subsidies for other stores, and he doesn't want to take subsidies for his stores because he says it's anti-competitive. When you subsidize a store like Bass Pro, you're taking business away from sporting goods stores that are already in the area.
And so, Jude, let me bring this back to Aurora then. I mean, this idea that subsidizing one thing is in its own way, and Randall mentions this in his article, in its own way, it's a penalty on everybody else. I mean, are you hearing any of this kind of talk? And why and how was that? How could that vote possibly have been unanimous?
Exactly. Well, you know, it's picking winners or losers. There's a great parallel here between what the federal government's been doing with the bank bailouts, the federal stimulus plan, picking and choosing winners and losers in business, and then providing massive subsidies to stimulate the economy and create jobs. And the underlying question is should governments be responsible for creating jobs and stimulating the economy, or should they be the ones that stay away from it and let the market work? Now, in my opinion, it's been 235 years that we've been around, and I've never, ever read about or met a politician that is smarter than the market.
No doubt about that. Randall, what's your take on another fascinating part of your article? And I'm not finding this little bit right in front of me here, but basically, you argue about sort of the moral hazard characteristic of passing TIF financing. Talk about that a little bit.
Well, once you subsidize a hotel with TIF money, no other company is going to want to build a hotel in your city unless they also get TIF money. And so you end up creating this subsidy after subsidy after subsidy. Eventually, you run out of the ability to subsidize, and it turns out that cities that spend money on TIF, on average, grow slower than cities that don't use TIF because of the extra burden they've placed on their taxpayers and the unwillingness of developers to build in the community without getting subsidies of their own.
Yeah, now, Jude, if you haven't read Randall's paper, I'll email it to you. You need to see this.
Yes, I've read it.
Okay.
Now, Colorado taxpayers have to be concerned about this because this isn't just an Aurora project. Half of the $300 million, as I understand it, is being subsidized by the state of Colorado. So taxpayers throughout the state are going to be subsidizing this hotel and conference center in Aurora.
My understanding, that's additional to the $300 million subsidy from the city of Aurora.
Okay, so that's even more of a subsidy then.
And so tell us again, Randall, just so people really understand the mechanics of this. How is it that TIF actually damages the finances of the rest of the community surrounding the TIF area?
Well, let's say your community has, like Aurora, you know, a couple hundred thousand people, and they're all paying taxes, and suddenly we give this huge TIF to a development in the community, whether it's a hotel and conference center or a high-density, mixed-use development like the urban planners want, or anything at all, everybody's going to have to pay taxes to support the services for that project. That project's going to need water, it's going to need fire protection, police protection. Everybody's going to have to pay taxes for that because the taxes on that project are going to subsidize the project rather than to fire, police, and so on. And that means either you're going to get a lower quality of urban services or you're going to have to pay higher taxes because those fire districts and police and so on are going to have to come back to you and say, we need you to agree to increase our taxes because we aren't getting enough money to provide adequate services in the city.
Randall, I recall, again, somewhere in your article that I can't put my finger on at the moment, maybe it was a mayor, said that they had to cut city services 9 years in a row?
Well, that was a city that had serious financial problems, and TIF was a major part of those problems. And in some states, like Kansas, right across the line from you, taxing districts can opt out of TIF. They can say, we're not going to allow our share of the taxes on this new development to be used for TIF. We're going to keep it for ourselves. And if enough taxing districts opt out, then there won't be any TIF. Colorado doesn't give tax districts that opportunity. So when a city comes along and says, we're going to take this money that would otherwise go to fire, libraries, schools, police, and so on, all those districts lose, and they don't have any choice in the matter.
Well, and Ross, the irony here is that the city of Aurora has been cutting those services. They just shut four of the seven libraries and then reopened one. They've been closing pools. They've been closing rec centers. They've been having to make these decisions, yet, you know, they offer this massive, you know, stimulus plan to one particular business. So it's, you know, it just doesn't make sense.
Gentlemen, I think we're about out of time here for the evening. I want to thank you both so much for spending time on your Sunday with us. Jude Sandvall, my friend from Leadership Program of the Rockies and candidate for mayor of Aurora, thank you very much. And Randall O'Toole from the Cato Institute, anybody wants to read this great policy analysis, you can just Google Randall with one L, O'Toole, TIF, and it'll come up first thing on Google. Thanks again, Randall O'Toole, for your
thank
time
you.
This Sunday evening. Good night, guys.
Thank you.
When we come back, we will be joined by Ryan Frazier, another candidate for mayor of Aurora, and we will get his take. Apparently, if the vote was unanimous, Ryan must have voted for it. So we will talk about it after these words. Welcome back to Backbone Radio. Let's go right back to our phone lines. And my friend and current candidate for mayor of Aurora, Ryan Frazier, who I supported in his ultimately unsuccessful effort to defeat far-left Congressman Ed Perlmutter. Welcome back to the show, Ryan. Good to talk to you.
Ross, it's good to be back on with you. Thanks for inviting me on. And we had a nice day of campaigning today. I just got done with running a couple miles, and so I think it's fair to say if I was running anymore, I'd be a track star. So.
And I'm sure you would do well at that as well, Ryan. Let's talk about this Gaylord Entertainment, you know, tax increment financing project that looks not quite like a done deal, but well on its way here in Aurora. I'm led to believe that it was a unanimous vote on the city council. Is that right?
It was.
And you sit on the city council, so presumably you voted for it.
Mm-hmm.
And
I did.
So tell us, we just heard some discussion with Randall O'Toole from the Cato Institute and my other friend who is running for mayor of Aurora, Jude Sandvall, both of whom aren't very happy with the idea. So I want to get your take as to what it is about this project that you like.
I appreciate that, Ross. You know, this is one of those deals that, you know, Mayor Tower and the leadership at the Aurora Economic Development Council kind of led the way on, and the council provided input on, certainly, and ultimately was able to get unanimous support for. I can tell you, you know, there are a lot of things about the deal, the incentive package, if you will, that I did not like, and I think needs to be changed going forward. But as a council, there was two fundamental and I think tough and complex questions that the council had to really answer. It was, one, do you want the project and the associated economic benefits and jobs? And two, are you willing to use a TIF incentive framework to bring it to the region and specifically to Aurora? Not easy questions, a lot of information to try to make your way through, a lot of trade-offs that had to be made in the council, amongst the council members. You know, as I said before, TIFs are not perfect. There are things I don't like about their use. I'd prefer, quite frankly, to not have to offer any tax incentives, but that's not the world we live in today. And I think the use of urban renewal powers, specifically the blight designation as a requirement, is problematic. And thirdly, you know, TIFs do redirect tax revenue that would otherwise come into local governments to the project, assuming that the project would have happened anyway without the incentives. However, TIFs do serve, I think, a useful purpose, Ross, and I think to cities to help us bring job drivers to town. Mind you, you know, using only new tax revenue associated with the project to help finance the project and It's only limited to a set amount of time and requires the approval of both the city, county, and school district before it being implemented. And the reality is, if the project does not generate the taxes that are scheduled when it is built, then the project won't get anything unless otherwise agreed to. Now, this Gaylord Hotel is a pretty big deal. Big deal for Aurora, it's a big deal for Colorado, and it's something that, quite frankly, we think is a game changer for the entire Rocky Mountain region. It's a $824 million investment. It's projected to bring about 3,200 jobs to the local economy. 1,900 jobs, in addition to that 3,200, will be temporary jobs associated with the construction of the facility. It's estimated by both our very fiscally conservative finance director as well as an independent consultant brought in on the project to have an economic impact of $284 million annually on the region. And it's supposed to generate about $16 million in taxes to local government, with a net of $1.2 million still coming to the city after the TIF is implemented. Now, certainly one can argue, and I can understand the argument, that those are monies that would otherwise go towards fire and police and other city services. But the question I think many of us on the council tackled with is whether this incentive would bring this project to town. And if the project didn't come to town, well, there would be no taxes generated as associated with the project anyway. So it was a tough decision, and it's not one that I can tell you I'm perfectly happy with, Ross. But it was one that, on the whole, with trade-offs included, that I could support, because I felt that the economic impact on Aurora, on Colorado, in the region was so significant that it was worth the type of tax increment financing framework incentive that we provided Gaylord.
Ryan, what do you make of it? It seems like that this bill was given to the council, you know, like on a Friday or something, and it basically kind of like snuck through, where there was no opportunity for the media to get on to it before there was a vote.
Yeah, you know, I think that's a fair criticism, and in the sense that I do believe more time could have and should have been allowed. However, I will say that because it was such sensitive negotiations, and what I mean by that, Ross, is there, it wasn't just Aurora in the mix. There was Aurora, Broomfield, and Commerce City all competing, if you will, for this project. And so the negotiations for the project were kept to a minimum, if you will, from public disclosure in order to stay competitive, if you will. In this case, Aurora was able to outcompete, I guess, other jurisdictions to bring the project to Aurora.
Some people might argue that outcompeting just means, you know, willing to spend more of taxpayer money on it.
Well, you know, Ross, you know me. I'm a guy who's always and will continue to be fiscally conservative and prudent with the tax dollars. And in this particular case, I think that it's reasonable to have a conversation about whether we are extending new taxes or current taxes to support this project. As it's currently structured, there will be no current taxes coming from the city's coffers to pay for the incentive for this project. This project, the way it's structured, is only funded by new taxes directly associated with the property that Gaylord is building the hotel on and will operate their services on. And so it will be, again, from new taxes. And again, I would just offer up that of the $16 million in taxes that it's projected to generate annually for Aurora, there's still a net of $1.2 million that is expected to come back into the city. And upon the expiration of the TIF in 25 to 30 years, all revenues associated with this Gaylord project and the services and things that are on that campus, I'll call it, will come directly back into the city. Certainly, Ross, it's imperfect. I'm not going to sit here and tell you that I liked everything about it. I didn't. But I had to make trade-offs. Members of council had to make trade-offs about whether we wanted to have this project in the region and whether the economic impact, the jobs that would be created, were significant enough to support a incentive of this size. And so I supported it. I think it was, on the whole, a right decision, but certainly fair game for criticism and healthy skepticism. And I do think going forward that some changes do need to occur, one of those being this whole issue around the blight designation. I've long had a problem with this, quite frankly, and I do believe that we need to, we being Aurora, Denver, Commerce City, Colorado Springs, we need to go to the state legislature because this is where they have to make the decision and say, listen, when it comes to providing these incentive packages, let's take this requirement for urban renewal and blight designation out of it. Why do we have to have that? If we think it's a good project, and we think that we can provide enough public confidence and support for this project, it would impact us economically in a way in which we think is a significant economic driver, then let's take the blight designation completely out of it.
I'm with you on that, Ryan. Absolutely with you. We're going to have to leave it there. Ryan Frazier, thanks so much for your time. And although I'm not sure I agree with your conclusion, I really appreciate your open discussion of the trade-offs that you had to weigh in making your decision. It's one of the things I like a lot about you, Ryan. So
thanks
a lot for spending time with us this evening. Stay with us right here on Backbone Radio. We'll be back after these words.